Thanks for having me. My name is Tim. I'm from AnsibleWorks. I run the services and support organization there. And is the volume okay? It's a little boomy to my ears, but all right. So I'm going to give you guys a quick overview of what Ansible is. We'll have a demo of some of the interesting functionality, and then hopefully we'll have some time for questions if you folks have questions. So first of all, how many people have heard of Ansible and know generally what it is? Okay, so I've got kind of a fresh crowd here. Ansible is an open source tool. It's an IT automation, orchestration, and configuration management system that draws a lot of ideas from older tools and brings a lot of things together. Concepts such as orchestration, which when we say orchestration, we mean manipulating an entire tier of application or an entire application stack, which may be made up of multiple tiers. In a coordinated way, so as opposed to sort of a one system at a time approach to configuration and automation of tasks, Ansible can coordinate those operations throughout the system. And we'll show you an example of this as well. Ansible can talk to anything that has an API or exposes an SSH interface. So you can use Ansible to talk to your networking devices, your load balancers, firewalls, switches, and so on, as well as your typical Unix or Linux machines. Ansible doesn't do Windows yet, but now that I know Bruce, hopefully we can make that happen in a way that makes sense. So I'm not going to go into detail about what continuous deployment is. With this crowd, I probably don't need to. For the purposes of this discussion, I like to think of continuous deployment as frequent application updates, frequent unattended application updates, the ability to maybe even several times a day or several times an hour update your application in the field from, you know, code committed to rolled out to your customers. And to do that, to get to a continuous deployment environment, I think there are some characteristics of the tools that you choose that are really important. Number one, a tool should be easy to use. Dealing with your deployment tools and your configuration tools should not be a full-time job on its own. It should be the tool should work for you. It should be easy to get started to do basic things, and it should be possible to do complicated things without becoming, you know, an expert in any particular tool. It should be non-intrusive, so the tool should work with your workflow, the way that you've decided to deploy your application, and it shouldn't force you into certain layers of abstraction that may not make sense for your application or for your environment or just the way that you think. A tool that you use for continuous deployment should be predictable. You should be able to trust the results. There shouldn't be any sort of undefined behavior or you know, ordering weirdness that might interrupt your flow of work. And ideally, a tool like this would be powerful and be able to handle most of the tasks that you give it. You shouldn't have to necessarily bring to bear a lot of different tools and duct tape them together. Continuous or configuration management, orchestration, and general automation tasks, deployment of applications are all really closely related. And it'd be nice to have a tool that does all three or four, depending on how you count, all of those tasks in one tool. So you might not be too surprised that Ansible satisfies, in my opinion, most of these requirements, or all of these requirements. Some of the things that are different about Ansible compared to other configuration management, deployment, and orchestration tools, Ansible is very simple. We like to say you can automate in plain English. That's not really true. It's not really plain English. But it's as close as we can get. It's really a human-readable format, and I'll show you some examples of the playbook format that we've developed to really express your configurations, to express your automation tasks. There's minimal jargon in the system. We try to keep the language pretty clear and keep the terminology straightforward without introducing a lot of specific sort of jargony words and terms to describe what's going on. When you're writing an Ansible configuration, you're not writing code. There are very few sort of traditional language constructs. It is a it is a DSL, a domain specific language, the playbook format, but you're not writing code. You're not writing loops and so on. And if you get to the point where you feel like you want to, we've built some mechanisms to help you get away from that and get back to sort of the pragmatic approach of describing your infrastructure as data. And we've taken a really pragmatic approach to abstractions. One thing that some people, when they first encounter Ansible, they wonder, you know, how do you abstract away this idea or abstract away this idea to different levels? And we really try and encourage people not to do that, and just, you know, build your configurations in a way that's easy to read and easy to understand for someone who's looking at it 6 months down the line or someone who doesn't necessarily know Ansible. And we think we've pretty well achieved that goal. Ansible is secure, not because we're security experts by any means, but because we have explicitly decided not to become security experts, and we rely entirely on SSH communication by default. So basically, Ansible piggybacks on your existing SSH infrastructure for connecting to the remote hosts under management. OpenSSH is probably, if not the most well-reviewed, it probably is the most well-reviewed piece of crypto software out there. And if there are any problems, if there are any vulnerabilities, those will be closed very quickly. And the same can't be said for something like Ansible, which doesn't have quite as many eyes on it. So we gain the benefit of all of that. There's no custom public key infrastructure necessary to use Ansible. And there's no agent running on the managed servers. This is a big difference between Ansible and some other tools. Ansible is completely agentless. We push, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in the architecture overview, but we push a small module out to the remote host per task, and it runs and then deletes itself and returns the result and then deletes itself, which means implementing Ansible gives you no additional attack surface for your managed machines. This also means that we can coexist with other configuration tools. We're not going to conflict with a Puppet agent or a Chef agent or anything like that. And you can use Ansible in conjunction with those or other tools, maybe, you know, BMC Blade Logic or Opsware or whatever. And I mentioned this previously, but Ansible covers more automation tasks than other tools. So Ansible was designed from the very beginning to be able to handle not only the declarative configuration management where you say, on this class of systems, these files must exist and these packages must be installed at this version. And Ansible, you can express those kind of declarative ideas in Ansible, and Ansible will make it so. But you can also very simply define steps of tasks and just, you know, basically take a shell script and translate it to Ansible. And this might be a good way to do your software deployment. Say, check out your code from Git, copy it to the server, restart the service. That sort of deployment type of task is very easy to accomplish with Ansible as well. You don't have to translate that into, you know, the idempotent resource model declarative state type of idea. You can mix and match the two, which is pretty powerful. And along with that, you can address tiers of machines as a group, and you can do it in a coordinated sense. And I'll show you an example of this where you manage a load balancer and a monitoring system during a rolling upgrade of a software application. So here's an overview of the architecture. Ansible runs on a machine somewhere. This is your management machine. There's a couple exceptions to that. I'll talk about that in a minute. Ansible runs on the management machine. It has an inventory of your systems. And the most basic form of inventory is just a flat file of host names in groups and subgroups with associated variables. There's other places to get inventory. There are a bunch of modules. Ansible has about 120 modules. We kind of take the batteries included approach, kind of in a Python sense. So if someone contributes a module and it's generally useful in high quality code, we will bring it into Ansible and we'll test it and we'll maintain it. So there's modules from everything from MySQL to OpenStack Quantum and so on and so forth. So you've got your playbook, which operates against things in your inventory. When you run a playbook or when you run an ad hoc command, which is just a way to issue a command across a set of servers, Ansible will connect via SSH, copy the module over, the module will run, the results will be returned, and Ansible will move on. There's another mechanism of connection. So there's actually the connection mechanism is pluggable. The default is SSH, but we have a 0MQ based mechanism, which is about 10 times faster than SSH. So if you have thousands of hosts and you're operating and you're hitting them over and over again with various configuration tasks, you'll probably see some benefit from switching to the 0MQ mechanism. We do a little bootstrap to install the 0MQ. It doesn't remain on the system. It actually times out after a certain period of time. So we kind of maintain the agentless state that way as well. In our experience, though, most people don't need to use the 0MQ mechanism. For most people, most tasks, you're not hitting all of your thousands of hosts over and over again in quick succession. If you are, then you might need to use 0MQ. Most people use SSH. We can also talk to networking devices as well. We can manage load balancers. There are modules for F5, Netscaler, Nginx, and so on in the system. And of course, it wouldn't be 2013 without mentioning cloud. We can talk to cloud instances just as easily as any other. In fact, one of the benefits of the SSH connection is that most cloud instances, whether they're EC2 or Eucalyptus or OpenStack, have the default connection mechanism is an SSH key, and it's injected into the instance when it boots. Ansible can take that private key and connect right away without any other bootstrapping. Ansible's about a year and a half old. It's an open source project. It's fairly young. We've had about 13 releases, I think. And we're seeing some really great adoption from the community. We have almost 200 unique contributors, which I think is pretty impressive for a project of its age. And I think one of the reasons why we have so many is because it's very easy to contribute to the system. If you're just building a small module, it's pretty easy to get up to speed, and you can build a module for your task in a couple of hours, and then hopefully that will be useful for other people as well. We've seen a great uptake. The Fedora infrastructure project is using Ansible for all of their configuration tasks, among a bunch of others. And if you want to know more, call me afterwards. I won't go into too much detail here. I want to stay fairly technical. But we're pretty excited about the interest that we've seen in the system. This is our sort of batteries included list. there'll be a quiz at the end, so pay attention. We've got modules from everything from basic file and command execution tasks to specific stuff like RabbitMQ management, Django management. A bunch of OpenStack stuff is in there. And these modules are what gives Ansible the kind of the power of the playbook language. So you can write a playbook that only uses one module, maybe the command module to execute remote commands. But a lot of the power and the expressiveness comes from these modules that are built into the system and allow you to do useful things like manage your MySQL databases and so on from just a couple of lines of playbook content. Some of the most common modules that you'll see, of course, are package management. So one of the things you almost always do to a system when it boots up is you install certain packages on it. So of course, there are modules for Yum and apt and Arch Linux and Mac ports and some FreeBSD stuff. You can specify that a package must be installed or must be absent. You can ask for certain version numbers of packages if you have specific requirements. So that's kind of that declarative sense of package management there. And then the less declarative stuff, the command execution, you've got command and shell. Command just runs a command on the remote server via SSH. Shell actually passes it to the shell, so you can use shell constructs and so forth. Service management is for init script management, restart services, start services, etc. And of course, file handling, you need to copy files to your servers. Those modules are there. And these are also more declarative, copy and template, where you say this file must exist, and you and Ansible will make it so. If the file is already there and doesn't need to be changed, then Ansible will not change anything. And then for deployment, one of the common patterns that we've seen is people deploying directly from your source control. So we've got modules for the various popular source control management tools out there. So here's an example of a very simple host inventory. And when I get into the demo a little bit, I'll show you a real life example. This is super simple. You've got three hosts. They're in two groups. You can target your web servers, or you can target your database servers with an operation, or you can target all the hosts. Now, in a real environment, a flat text file of inventory is not going to be very scalable, so we've got other inventory sources. You can source from your EC2 cloud, and they'll be automatically grouped based on tag, based on availability zone, et cetera. And we have similar modules for Rackspace and OpenStack. If you're using Cobbler, we can source inventory from there. And it's pretty easy to write a custom connector to another kind of CMDB if you have something that we don't have built-in support for. So let's talk a little bit about playbooks. I'm going to show you a demo soon, and that'll probably it'll be useful to understand a few of these things. You've got a playbook. A playbook is the top-level descriptor for your automation content. A playbook is made up of plays. Plays target an individual set of hosts. So you might have a play for your web servers, you'd have a play for your database servers, you'd have a play for your load balancers, and you could have a common play that applied to everything. Each play has a list of tasks. The tasks call modules. And the everything happens in strict order, the way you specify it in your playlist. So there's no sort of undefined dependency ordering or anything. If you need if you need to express the idea of dependencies, you just have to turn it into a step-by-step list. There's one exception to the step-by-step idea. That's the idea of handlers. If you're going through a list of tasks and you need to trigger something, say you're configuring Apache and you need to change something in the main Apache configuration file, and then add a virtual host directive to another file. Using the declarative mechanisms in Ansible, you would need to somehow signal that Apache needs to be restarted if the file's changed. So what you can do is you can trigger a handler on each of the tasks that might modify the config file. If the config file does not need to be modified, nothing will be changed and nothing will be restarted. But if one of those tasks or both of those tasks actually does change a config file, then the handler will fire at the end of the play, restarting Apache. So you're not going to get duplicate restarts or anything like that. And this is really the only jargon you have to learn. We've intentionally kept the language really simple so that you can talk about this to people who may not understand Ansible, and you can show them playbooks, and even a non-technical person should, in theory, be able to look at this playbook and kind of understand what's going on and grasp the idea. And you can kind of see here an example. Hopefully it's pretty readable. So this is a full playbook. It only has one play, and the play has two tasks. So first we have the name of the play. Then we tell Ansible which hosts it's targeting. So we're just targeting all hosts. In the real world, this would probably be hosts, web servers to target your web servers. And then the tasks here are also named. These are freeform names. So you can say install a httpd, and then you call the yum module. You give it a package name or list of packages, and then you ask Ansible what state you want those packages to be in. Do you want them present, or do you want them absent, or do you want them on the latest version, or do you want them on these specific versions? All of that stuff is you can express that in the playbook. And then we start the Apache service with the service module. And again, it's a declarative state. So you say name equals the service name equals httpd, and the state we want it to be in is running. And if it needs to be changed, Ansible will make it so. Ansible is a very extensible system. As I mentioned before, you can build custom inventory sources. You can construct callbacks if you need to do some sort of sophisticated logging or logging to a centralized location. And you can also develop your own connection plugin. So if you have a device that maybe has a different kind of API or doesn't handle SSH, you could build a connection plugin to talk to that device. We have a couple of connection plugins out there. Of course, there's the SSH plugin, the SSH connection type. There's the 0MQ firewall mode. And we also can talk to a cheroot. It's not exactly what's happening, but you can manage a cheroot, or you can manage you can construct a playbook to work within a cheroot, that is. So let me go through a really quick example, and then I'll actually show it to you. This is a common model. It's not complicated. It's something that everybody who runs a web application does. Some people do it by locking their team in a room and going through the steps manually. Some people have this automated using custom scripts. But the idea is you've got a multi-tier web application. You have your load balancer and your monitoring system, and you have your software living somewhere. You've got app servers, web servers, and not shown is the database server, which is usually present. So the first thing you're going to do in the Ansible world is execute the playbook. And what I'll show you in a couple minutes live is actually Ansible can signal the load balancer to say, you know, say we have 10 web servers. We're going to take two at a time, or one at a time, or five at a time. We're going to take whatever that serial number you've chosen, take those first two out of the load balancing pool by signaling the load balancer, tell the monitoring system we're taking these down for maintenance so that nobody gets paged unless necessary, and then we're going to apply the update to the app servers or the web servers or both. We'll move on to the next tier, and once those two servers are done, Ansible will go back to the load balancer and back to the monitoring server and undo the changes. So put them back in the pool, assuming the tests pass, and then move on to the next two and the next two and the next two until the entire system is updated. So this is not an uncommon task. Ansible was designed to make modeling this task in an automated sense very easy. So let's see it in real life. I've got a handful of VMs here. Hopefully I can get my, let's see, beautiful. Okay, so I've got a handful of VMs here. I have, I'll just show you the inventory file here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to comment out the second web server. I've got a web server, a database server, a load balancer, which is HA proxy, and then I've got an Agios machine running. These VMs right now are all bare CentOS installs. The only thing I've done is set up an SSH key connection so I don't have to type the password every time. So I've got a playbook here that, is this on? This is on, isn't it? I've got a playbook here that looks like this. It's pretty simple. It's calling into roles that I've developed that have a common role which sets up NTP and configures my software repositories and so on. I've got a role for the database server. So this top-level playbook is not very interesting. All it's doing is breaking down the hosts in my inventory and applying roles to them. So let me run this. And this will take a few minutes to go through, and while it happens, I'll talk about what's happening. You see this gathering facts right here. If you're a Puppet user or know something about Puppet, you might recognize the term facts. Facts are just gathered information about the remote system. So Ansible goes out and gathers the facts. That is a little hard to read, isn't it? But what this says here is changed. In yellow, it's changed. Green is OK. Changed means, of course, Ansible changed something on the target host. Green means nothing has changed. So if my internet connection is fast enough, and I should really set up a proxy on my laptop to make this quicker, in just a couple of minutes, we will get a fully installed Nagios, HA proxy, Apache, et cetera, stack ready to go, and I'll be able to show it to you. And then the next thing I'll be able to do, let me just open up a new terminal here. Hopefully that's visible. What I'll be able to show you is the idea of a rolling upgrade. So let's see, this is going to be a little tough. There we go. So this is how we would express a rolling upgrade using Ansible. It's only a few lines of playbook content, but if you can see here at the top for each, let's see, we're targeting the web servers, and we're using a serial of one. This means we're going to target one machine at a time. We're going to complete the entire process for web server one, then move on to two. Ordinarily, in a large environment, you'd set that to 5 or 10 or, you know, however many you wanted to target at once. So what we're going to do is, for each web server, we're going to disable Nagios for that host. We're going to disable the server in HA proxy. And you can see we've got a Nagios module that just says action disable alerts. We give it the host name. And then we delegate to all of the monitoring servers that you have in your environment. And then we move on to the load balancer to disable that particular server. And then there's a couple different ways to approach the next step, but in this case, we simply reapply the existing sort of encapsulated roles to the web servers that we're talking to. And this will update the application to the version that you specify. After those roles have been reapplied, and that'll also apply any other configuration changes as well. So if you have modified the list of packages that you need installed on each of your systems, that will also apply to the rolling upgrade. Let's just check this over here. So we're installing MySQL. Once we've reapplied the role, which means applying the update, we undo the changes we made to the load balancer and to the monitoring server. So we re-enable the server in HA proxy, and we re-enable the Nagios alerts so that if the system goes down unexpectedly, you get a page. There's other things you can do here. One thing that a lot of people like to do is put a little test case in before we re-enable the server. So if for some reason the upgrade failed, we can test and we can bail and not go on and propagate that bad change to the rest of your servers, which is very easy to do in an automated environment. Okay, so this is just about done. Let me show you what one of the playbooks looks like inside the roles. We'll go ahead and look at, let's look at the base Apache. Well, we've already seen that, basically. We'll look at the web application that we're deploying. This is sort of a fragment of a play or a fragment of a playbook. It's just a list of tasks, and hopefully it's starting to look a little bit familiar. We're calling the yum module to install some packages. We're calling the SE Linux boolean module to do some SE Linux configuration. I usually just turn SE Linux off, but well, this supports both. And then we clone a repository from Git into the correct directory. So it's a trivial deployment. This can be extended to be more complicated. Most deployments are more complicated than this, but it could be a good starting point. All right, so we're still waiting on PHP and Git. However, I think, why don't we just be brave and see if the load balancer is responding. Let's see. Nope, not yet. All right, we'll give it another minute or two. Let's see. Ansible has the concept of variables, and variables can come from a lot of different places. The most basic place you can get variables from is your group variables, and these are variable files that are applied to named groups in your inventory. So if we take a look at the web servers here, we can see that we are defining an interface on which the web server should listen to, which repository we should get our web application code from, and then the repository hash or the commit hash of the version that we want. Come on, SE Linux, we're so close. There we go. All right, so you can see we're actually deploying the code to the web server. Now we're working on the load balancers. I apologize, I really should have had that proxy set up so I wouldn't be waiting for the downloads. Let's see. All right, we probably have a minute left. Any questions in the meantime? We can get ahead of that maybe. Yes? Is there a switch on the front?
voice is pretty loud. Like I said.
Do you want to come up and use this mic?
It should be on. It's on. It's on. It should be.
Yes. There we go.
You actually did not specify the network plugin in the playbook file, so it takes a default, I guess, SSH, right?
Yes. It defaults to SSH.
If I have to actually specify, then is there an option for that? I mean, let's say if I'm using any other networking plugin for that.
Yeah, so if you want to use a different connection plugin, you can actually just say Ansible-playbook, I think it's C, something like that. You can specify it on the command line. You can also specify it in the play. So this becomes important if you're dealing with, you know, local actions, which are kind of a, you know, slightly more advanced than this talk. But if you're doing a local action, you're running something locally on the Ansible machine for some other purpose. So maybe you're calling an API to launch a cloud server, and then you're going to be operating on that cloud server. So you can. There's a special kind of connection plugin called Local, which just runs locally. And you can specify that. You almost always specify that in the play because you've got a specific reason to do that. But you can override the connection on the command line as well if you know what you're doing. Thanks. Other questions while we wait for the repository? Okay, let's see if our load balancer is up. There we go. So we have a basic application. All it is a file that serves a version, and it's fairly simple. I want to show you Nagios. Nagios is not installed yet, but what I will show you next is actually a way to apply an upgrade to those web servers in a rolling fashion. And I really wish Nagios would install because I'm impatient. So the rolling upgrade will look like this. So what we're saying here is it's a little hard to read, but what we're saying is run the rolling upgrade playbook, and we're overriding a variable that lives in the system. So if you recall back to that group variable file that I showed you, we had a repository hash in there. And I could put in a specific repository hash in that file, or I could put it on the command line. In this case, I'm just going to go ahead and specify to pull the head of the repository. Come on, Nagios, you can do it. I'm not going to get brave and run both of these playbooks concurrently because I don't really know what's going to happen. What I am going to do, because I only have 10 minutes left and I want time for questions, I'm going to remove the monitoring host entirely and run the upgrade. So we're here at hitting the load balancer. It's redirecting us to one of the web servers. Version 5 is the version of the code. And we're going to go ahead and run the rolling upgrade. Now, this is by necessity going to skip the actual step of talking to the monitoring server, but what it will do is it will talk to the load balancer, take the affected server out of the pool, upgrade the application, and put the thing back in the pool. And you can see it's actually going through all of the configuration steps, but for web server, but none of them are going to change except for the actual code deployment because we've already done the things like set up Apple and install the Nagios plugins and so on and so forth. And this is an example of Ansible's idempotency where you can run the same playbook over and over again, and if you've written a playbook in such a way that it is idempotent, nothing is going to change. You don't have to. You can write a playbook that just runs commands, and those commands will run. But you've got ways to make it, to give it that idempotency. Speed of the network aside, I'm impressed that you guys have conference-wide access here. Good work. Come on, use next 2 gigahertz. Yeah. All right, so we've applied the upgrade, and now we're on version 6. Nothing too exciting. It's a simple thing. People do this all day, every day. But Ansible gives you a really quick and easy way to model this kind of thing, and it can be extended to much more sophisticated deployment tasks. A couple of examples. One of our customers, AppDynamics, is a very quickly growing application performance management company based in San Francisco. They're growing very, very quickly. They're deploying their application to their customers or into their data center environment on over 250 machines many times a day. And they're using Ansible to do that, and they're expecting it to scale to whatever extent they need it to scale, which they're not slowing down anytime soon. Gawker Media, the guys behind the Jalopnik blog and Gawker and Lifehacker, I think, they're also using Ansible to deploy their content management application many times a day, basically triggered from commits to their source control. So this is how we tie back to the continuous deployment. So somebody commits some code, it goes through a test suite. Maybe it has a physical reviewer to sign off on it. In the case of AppDynamics, they're using Garrett to do that approval. As soon as that code is ready, it's deployed to the system completely automatically. And it saves these companies many man hours and man days of work to streamline their deployment and get new features out to their customers faster. All right, so, whoops, just messed up my slide. Hang on a sec. I want to put this up here quickly. Any questions? Got about 5 minutes left.
If the Git module doesn't do everything that is needed, special revlist commands or submodule configuration, is it better to modify the module, use the shell command, or create a new module?
Good question. I think we would love to see a pull request to improve the Git module. If there are things that it doesn't do that are sort of normal Git procedures, we would absolutely bring those back into core. If you're drastically changing the behavior, if you're breaking backwards compatibility is important to us. If you're doing that, we may suggest a separate module. If you're doing something that's probably not going to be useful to anyone else, I would probably suggest just doing a set of commands using the command module. But if it's something you think other people would use, and it doesn't break backwards compatibility, we would very much love to see a pull request on GitHub for that. More questions? Great, thanks. I've got some stickers and business cards up here if you're interested. Thanks, Chris.